look in your eyes and I can see if love's so dangerously.
All right, welcome back to the Earl Ingram Show. As always, you can join us at 844-967-2789. 844-967-2789. You can text us at that same number. It's Monday. That means Mondays with Sandy Williams. And Sandy, I was perusing the Washington Times this morning. from time to time, you know, I'll go to the Washington Times, the Washington Post, but the Washington Times. Let me just, I forgot we had Tom from L.A. on the line. I'm sure he wanted to weigh in on our last subject. Good morning to you, Tom. How you doing, man?
Good morning, Earl. First off, we the people are the government, and we must never forget that. Sandy, I don't know if you can explain to Earl last week what you talked about on the show. Because I thought it was so enlightening. I thought it spoke to both rural and also to urban areas of the country to know exactly what the breakdown is. And again, I don't know if you have that somewhere online. I know you have a show on there.
No, it's on the podcast. Everything that we've...
I know it's on the I know it's on the podcast, but I was looking for something that's just kind of like a one sheet. Because I'd like to be able to send that to people that I know of that live in the rural areas.
Yeah,
I know it's 16, but it's I would love to have some type of thing because it just made so much sense when you're looking at $60,000, $67 being the annual income of most middle class people, and $60,000 or $64,000 of that is going for daycare. And for rent and utilities and healthcare, you can start to see why it is that $28 an hour is nowhere near $60,000. So I just wish if you could, I'd love for you to reiterate that again for the listening audience as well, because I think it's really important. So I thank you guys so much for that. I thought it was really great breakdown, and I know Earl would love it.
All right, Tom, thank you very much. Sandy?
Well, yeah, I rolled up my sleeve and looked at more specific Wisconsin data, and with doing it now from memory, but the median income in Wisconsin, as reported, the most recent reported median income was for a family was $63,000+, which was like $10,000 off of the national median. And then I looked at average costs in Wisconsin for various factors. And so the average and the average family is 1.5 kids. And so what the average cost of daycare for 1.5 children in daycare using institutional daycare, not nanny, but individual daycare was $16,000 a year for 1.5. And the average cost for health insurance plus the deductible, if you take advantage of the federal limit of 8.5% of your income on health premiums, was another $16,000, and so that was health care and daycare.
So half of the 67 is already spent.
Half of the 64 is already spent on those two.
And not even factoring in taxes.
Right. And then you have taxes. The average tax on that amount of Wisconsin is $14,000.
Wow.
And then the average rent for that family is $1,400 a month, which doing the math, it was $14,000, I think, a year, $14,000 or $15,000 a year.
Well, the money's all gone already.
Yeah, and then you have, when you added to that, the internet costs, telephone costs for two, cell phone costs for two, the internet costs for two, the average electric bill for two, which is $2,000 a year per household, and the gas cost of $500 a year, you ended up with without paying for food, without paying for an automobile, without paying for anything else, okay, you ended up with $67,000 spent out of $63,000 earned. So you had a $4,000 deficit before you bought food and before you had an automobile or did anything or bought any clothing. So clearly, you've got this negative problem that is being experienced all across the state. This is not the takers, okay? These are not the, this is the middle income people in Wisconsin who are living paycheck to paycheck. And as I said on Friday, what I feel worst about is all these people don't understand that everyone else is in this boat with them. So all of them feel like, why can't I manage my money? Here we are both working, and here we are in a hole every month. Here we are living paycheck to paycheck. Here we are with zero money in our savings account, and they all feel guilty about it. And the main reason that they're in that hole is because they've got daycare costs and health care costs. If there was universal daycare and universal health care and education was essentially free like it is in the rest of the world, these people would be just fine, just fine.
Yeah, but you can't, on the one hand, then talk about handouts, because there's some of those people who call things handouts.
Well, I know, but the point is, these aren't handouts. If you had universal health care, you would not be paying $16,000 a year for the health care, but you'd be paying taxes. Now, how progressive the tax rate is would determine how much that $63,000 family paid in increased taxes in order to get that health care. But I had an epiphany on the way here in the car, which is really, you know, the New Deal came along, and to some respects it came along to save capitalism because capitalism was failing. And I would say that right now America's version of capitalism is beginning to fail. We aren't supplying the workers the workplace needs in large part because of this daycare problem. And the people who are working in this economy, even the middle-class workers, those who are clustered around the median making up 75% of the workers in this country, are struggling paycheck to paycheck when they wouldn't be struggling paycheck to paycheck if they had universal health care and universal daycare. And it isn't free. It's not a handout. It isn't viewed as a handout in any state. We don't view public education as a handout. Why would we view public daycare as a handout?
So Sandy, the Build Back Better plan had some of the components that you are talking about in it. And in the Build Back Better plan, and initially I didn't know what that was, but as time went on, I started looking at some of the components that were in the Build Back Better plan under President Joe Biden. And there were Democrats who were supporting that plan, and because of Kyrsten Sinema and Joe Manchin, Build Back Better was not able to go through. Not one Republican supported Build Back Better. So, but the things that you are asking for, Sandy, that people should have in this country has been denied by the right. And so how do you begin? And this is the part I don't understand.
Well, I think let me interrupt. I think it's been denied by the right because it hasn't been explained properly, hasn't been discussed properly. We haven't forced the politicians to discuss it. And as a result of it not being discussed, these people in the middle class who feel guilty about their inability to manage their finances because they can't seem to make it would understand that nobody else is making it either and that they need to do something about it. The world has changed. We don't get health care at work like we used to. We don't have a stay-at-home parent like we used to, so we didn't used to need daycare. Now we do. The world has changed. The budget of a middle-class family looks different today than it used to look. And the reason it looks different is because the United States, in its socioeconomic wisdom, has not
addressed it
like all of the other countries have addressed it. If we were addressing it like all of Europe and essentially all of the developed world addresses it, that family wouldn't have daycare costs and they wouldn't have health care costs that they had to take out of their income. Their taxes would be covering it, but I'm confident that the tax on the median family of $63,000 would not be increased by the same amount as the $32,000 that is being supplanted by the state-provided health care. It would be, their taxes would be higher. If they paid $20,000 in taxes, they would be far better, instead of $14,000, they would be far better off, and they would be ahead of the game.
So here's what I don't understand. then why is it that if I'm a Republican and I'm supporting Republicans and I'm listening to what their plans are, for instance, I've listened to the plans of the Republicans once they take back over the House. Let me tell you what they are. We're going to investigate Hunter Biden. We're going to investigate Joe Biden. We're going to lower the taxes on the wealthy. We're going to do this. We're going to do that. Well, anywhere in there, Sandy.
Well, they talk about lowering the taxes on the medium income, and all they're really going to do is extend the tax reduction that's going to expire, because the only people that it was expiring on were the middle-income people.
So, Sandy, so I didn't hear them mention one of the things that you just extrapolated on. I hear what they're talking about. This is what we're going to go after. So how do you then get the Republicans, the Republican politicians, to speak the language that you just spoke, and then the people who elect them to demand that they speak that language?
Well, I think
who's going to do that?
I think what we need to do is we need to get the Democrats to speak this language. We need the Democrats to speak to the middle-income people. If we solve this problem for middle-income people, we will solve it for the lowest-income people as well. And so, you know, you can solve these problems without only speaking to the lowest-income people. The Democrats have made a mistake. And it's the reason why rural Wisconsin isn't purple, because it would be purple if we were speaking this language and talking to them. Because what I just described is the plight of people all over the state. People all over the state are living paycheck to paycheck as middle-income people. Their rent might not be as high as I just described in other communities, but their income might not be quite as high either. And so we just need to speak to this general malaise that exists in the middle income. We need to say the capitalists of America need to save capitalism, because if it is failing for the middle income people, the 75% of the people in this country are struggling, and they wouldn't be struggling if the state was providing to them what is provided all across the world.
So I want to continue that. On the other side, our phone lines are open at 844-967-2789, 844-967-2789. You too can join the conversation. We'll be right back. At 844-967-2789. That's 844-967-2789. You can text us at that same number. It's Monday. That means Mondays with Sandy Williams. And you know, Sandy, it's when we have this conversation, and I get it, and as I stated when I first got back, and when we first started the show this morning, I said that I had this over the weekend, these conversations with people from rural parts of the state who now are compadres in civic media radio and our sister stations. And I asked them, so, and I remember Pat Kreitlow, who is the guy who comes on before me, and he said, well, you know, I used to be a Democrat.
Republican.
A Republican, right. And so many of us swung over because Donald Trump, as you stated, was talking to their hurt. And so they thought that the Democrats weren't. And Donald Trump really was able to convince.
Well, I see. I would disagree that he was talking. I think he was talking to their anger. Okay, and I think that these people across the state continue to fester. Everybody I know who resides in this middle class is desperate and is living a life of desperation, afraid they'll be sick, afraid they'll miss a paycheck, feeling guilty about their inability to make ends meet, and nothing is solving their problem, so they're angry. And some of them can be angry and and decide to embrace the Democratic Party because they think somehow they will come through. But many of them, I think, particularly in rural Wisconsin, where the Democrats seem to be speaking only to urban citizens, decided that Trump represented their anger. He, at least, was going to flip a bird to the establishment and demonstrate, and a vote for Trump would demonstrate how frustrated these people were and how angry they were. And I think that was the birth of Trumpism. I think if we look through this, we can find that Donald Trump struck a chord with middle America, people whose interest he wasn't representing. The only thing he represented was their anger and frustration. And he's made his entire political stamp now anger and frustration and anti-establishmentism.
So I want to challenge the premise of that Democrats are doing something for urban America.
Well, they aren't, probably.
What do you mean? There's absolutely nothing Democrats have done.
Well, they have tried. Well, they've tried, I think.
I would challenge, in what manner? If you look at urban centers across the nation, there is total collapse of family structure. There's total collapse of any semblance of safe communities and decent housing and education.
Well, I admit, yes.
And opportunities for decent work. So when rural America speaks and somehow believes that the Democrats have decided that they're going to do all these things for urban America, it's just not founded in fact.
Well, I think the rhetoric and the politics of the Democrats have been focused on urban America. I think their ability to deliver to urban America has been impeded by a couple of things. One, I think their message isn't clear enough to grab enough people to cause it to happen. Number two, I think the Republicans have set up a system of government at the federal level that is deadlock. Okay, deadlock doesn't get you from here to there in terms of solving problems. I think three, a lot of what's the problems in urban America relate to the poverty and the desperation.
Yes.
However, is driven by this lack of health care, lack of daycare, lack of adequate education opportunities. We aren't giving the newborn children, wherever they're born, whether they're born in urban America or rural America, these people are not getting these new birth. This next generation is not getting the opportunities offered to them that should be offered to them. And a big reason for that is the lack of daycare, the lack of health care, and the impoverished, desperate condition even working class middle America lives in. They might live in a house, but they struggle to pay their bill.
So people,
they might have credit cards, but the debt on that credit card is being resorted to.
So people in urban America, many of them don't have credit cards. Don't have transportation. They don't have vehicles. They don't have homes that are theirs. They are renting in some of the worst places. They are taken advantage of when it comes to lending and the amount of what it costs for them to get a loan at the bank is people know the historic policies of business in America towards people who live in urban areas. That hasn't changed.
Well,
and so when people who don't have bank accounts, who use check cashing places as their mode for credit, for being able to cash a check, the fact that there aren't companies where to make $67,000 a year for people who live in the central city, they think they're millionaires. So I'm saying the thought that the Democrats are supporting the urban America is just not true.
Well, my point is that by combining the interests, it is definitely true that the impoverished in America live a life that is far more desperate and far worse than the middle America people who are living paycheck to paycheck and are feeling desperate themselves. But if we solve, there's a broad class of people where if we solve some of these problems that are a solution for middle America, they will also serve as a solution for a lot of these impoverished people, and they will also serve as a solution for this next generation. If this next generation can go to daycare when they're 1.5 or 2 years old and begin their life with the advantages of having daycare and preschool training. And if they can have health care provided to them and they're certain of it, even if their parents are working in minimum wage jobs and the two of them together mean that they don't qualify for badger care, it will make a difference.
So, Sandy, I don't disagree with that. I agree with that 100%.
Yeah.
My only thing is, who's stopping that? It's the Republican Party that is saying no to that.
Well, that's gaslighting in a way, because I would say that it's the Democratic Party who's failing to tell the story and failing to reach out and failing to make rural America purple.
All right, got to go to a break. 844-967-2789. What say you? So, I'm... You can join us at 844-967-2789, 844-967-2789. You can text us at the same number as Monday. That means Monday's with Sandy Williams. And let's go to Bill from Oconomowoc. Hey, good morning, Bill. How you doing? Thank you very much for the call. You say what?
What Sandy said a few minutes ago is so true. The Republicans are to blame, but the Democrats, I think, have more responsibility by holding them accountable. If you think about Trump and all the stuff that went on with Trump, it was Republicans, Liz Cheney and Adam, that held him, accountable. The Democrats refuse to collectively hold them accountable. And here's exactly where we're going. We have, if not a supermajority, a majority in the Senate. The Senate could easily say, we're going to hold the guys who were reelected to the Republicans who were election deniers to be censored. It's in the books. It's on the law. They took an oath of office to defend for domestic and foreign terror, and they didn't. That was domestic terrorism. They could be held accountable, just even in office, just by censorship. Another thing they can do is, and it's possible. It's a long shot, but it's possible. But there's a lot of talk. Liz Cheney could end up being Speaker of the House. Oh my gosh, how this country would start to come together again. And the part of the Democrats to hold these guys accountable. Some of them should be in jail, and they're still walking around free. And the Republicans? No, they're the criminals. We got to have them held accountable. I'll hang up or whatever.
Hey, Bill, let me say this to you. So you want the Democrats to hold the Republicans accountable, responsible for some of these things? They really, realistically, the Democrats, they can't force Republicans to do the kinds of things that they want them to do, and they don't have the power to do it. They don't have, control of, and that's, you think that's going to change the outcomes for the things Sandy is talking about when we talk about the middle class?
Yes, I do.
And from what perspective?
Well, here's the perspective on the censorship that I just mentioned. Censorship means that they can, hold the office, but they're kind of nullified. Censorship is something that is also in Robert's Rules of Orders, in the Orders of Organization, and you read the oath. These men talk, and then they broke the oath. Well, that's accountability. And once the far right is held accountable, all this other stuff you're talking about, we have to work together, not as independents, but together to make this country better. They don't have any solution.
So it's Democrats' responsibility to hold the far right accountable. Isn't it their voters? Shouldn't they be the ones who hold them accountable?
Well, no, they can't, because that's impossible, because they have so many propaganda machines out there that they're swayed to thinking this is the right way to think. I'm going to be having lunch with a guy tomorrow that's one of those people, and he even holds up the Bible to try and give credence to what the Republicans do. I find that just hard to even fathom. But my point is, if we start at the top, the worst of the worst, the Republicans and Democrats, I mean, how does Ron Johnson walk around today with everything he's done and denies it all, and we throw up our hands? If I was a Democrat in office, I would start. Now, at least I'd have it on the books. I started it that we have to censor that man. He cannot be in a public office speaking the way it is when he plotted to overthrow the government and supported it.
Okay, Bill. Sandy wants
That's
to respond
exactly
to you.
The example.
Bill,
here's what I would hope we could do is we would stop talking about either Hunter Biden's computer or who said what to whom, or even the January 6th thing, horrible as it was. And if we could get back to talking about what it is the people need, what the plight of the common man is, what the plight of the middle class is, we could wrench away from the Republicans, or at least force the Republicans to change their platform and to begin to vote on matters on a bipartisan basis that were presented to them about, for instance, universal child daycare. Let's just take that as one issue. If we started talking about that to the people, and if the people all across the state understood the importance of that to themselves, if they understood even more fundamentally the universal health care, Medicare for all, if they understood the way that would work for them, the way that would increase the take-home pay of middle America by possibly increasing their taxes somewhat and reducing their expenses a great deal, they would understand the benefits of it and the importance of it. And they also could look at their own budgets, and the light bulb would go on that their budgets, their home budgets, the one that make them feel desperate and guilty, would be just fine if these things were taken care of at the government level as they are elsewhere. And I'm not talking about a handout. I'm talking about, you know, people with money. In Medicare for All, there are premiums for Medicare. The more money you make, the higher your premiums would be. So this isn't a handout. This is just a revision in the manner in which the payor is established and the universal access is assured. But if we start talking about stuff that matters and stop talking about who shot John and who should be censored and which, and those people wouldn't get reelected if they didn't decide that they were going to address real issues. And our problem in America right now is we can't get politicians to address real issues and to enact them.
Bill, quickly.
Well, Sandy, I love what you said. I really, really do. And I don't even want to say in a perfect world. I think you're spot on. But part of it is, and you said it, and I'm leaning more your direction, is that we have to educate people and say, okay, let's look what's important. You're right. Rise above it is your attitude, Sandy, and I like that. I think that's just tremendous, to stay above it. Don't get in the fray. Don't get in the ditches. Don't start slinging mud. Let's just see. We're going to move forward today, guys. Who's moving forward with us? So in closing, you guys are just awesome. That whole station you've got there, you do a super job.
Hey, Bill, thank you very much for the call. I appreciate it. Tom, you want back in?
Also, let's not forget about the student loans and other loans that these young people are being saddled with, not at the interest rate of 3% like I was when I went to school, but we're talking 15, 16%. I mean, really and truly, if you look at it, the difference between a low-income person and a middle-class person is the middle-class person has the ability to develop some credit, and they put everything on their credit cards. And the low-income person doesn't have the opportunity to put their food and those other things on their credit cards.
Yeah, they don't have any credit
cards. So therefore, they're, you know, living on the streets or whatever it might be. I just think that it's like I said, yeah. I thought what Sandy brought up last week was brilliant because of the fact that it just shows that. And it's for rural, it's for urban, it's looking at, I mean, just take for an example, we as a society decided that child daycare is a very important thing, and we put it on our taxes, $100 a month or whatever it might be, and we pay for that. That's $15,000 right there that's been freed up. Let's take health care. Bernie Sanders' issue, Medicare for all. We go ahead and we free that up. That's another $15,000.
So listen.
Well, now you can put money in savings.
So I believe and I agree with all of that. But the people who are preventing that, we know there's a group of people who are preventing that. They're calling that a handout. Politically, that group of people will not have not bought into that.
Well, let me just say, I think that's gaslighting.
Because we, the people.
How is that gaslighting?
Oh, it's gaslighting because we, the people who think this way, aren't messaging this, aren't talking about it, aren't doing an effective job of explaining it to the people who are frustrated, angry, and frightened. If you're frustrated, angry, and frightened, you're not thinking, you're reacting. And you're in a downward spiral that's dragging you into whatever it's dragging you into Trumpism. It's so, dragging you away from reality.
So the people in the community where I live, I know their pain. Yeah. I see them. I talk to them every day. They're aware that they can't afford daycare. It's not just a rural area that can't afford daycare. I know people who are in the lower rung of this, though, Sandy, who can't work because there is nobody.
This is my point, though.
And Earl.
Yeah.
Earl. And that's what I'm saying is that, look, if it's bad for the middle class, an average middle class person, then you know it's horrible for the person that's not making those wages. So the thing is, if we did have, an FDR type policy where we had Medicare for all and not where it's being done by some private corporation, if we did have child care for all, then that actually would free up 30 grand right there. That even the person that's making a lower income,
and I know what you're going to say, Earl.
$25 an hour.
Earl's going to say they don't have the 30 grand to free up if they're living in impoverishment. My point is, yes, those you have the pain. You are absolutely. But if the Democrats only speak about that portion of the population that is experiencing the desperate poverty that you're talking about, they're missing the boat because they. The people who have this middle class impoverishment, this other version of it that's more tolerable but still painful, aren't going to hear the message, and they're going to think, as they do, that what the Democrats are talking about is money for the very poor and nothing for me.
So let me ask you, Sandy, if the Democrats speak in that with that voice, you believe that the rural and the middle class America is going to say, yeah, okay, the Democrats up for us, hold on.
Absolutely.
I'm going to stop voting Republican.
They're either going to stop voting Republicans or the Republicans are going to have to take this issue up and deal with it in a positive way, which means they're going to have to vote on bipartisan basis.
But see, that's the part of it I don't understand. Why won't the Republicans do that in the first place? It's the right thing to do.
It's not being messaged.
Because they're bought off by the donors. Because of money and politics.
Because
of the fact that we don't have unions anymore like you did at A.L.L. Smith.
Hey,
we don't have these things that actually were able to help all of the people.
Earl asked me that same.
The Republicans keep on doing food fights over Donald Trump this and Hunter Biden this and blame crime. Crime would actually go down if we actually had a social safety net.
Earl, you asked me that question off the record. Why aren't the Republicans doing it? My answer is because they don't have to. You know, when they asked President Clinton, why was he doing the bad things he was doing? He said, because I could. Politics is about what you can do and what you can't do and what you don't have to do. And the Republicans have not held their feet to the fire about doing this stuff. And meanwhile, their donors and people like Donald Trump have been able to deflect attention from stuff that needs to get done and has attracted attention from people and gotten their votes for reasons that relate to their emotions.
And I will say this also, if I may, is that if Joe Biden did a Oval Office address and brought out the fact of these different facts in terms of what the money is, and I am on your side, middle class. I am on your side, unions. We are, the Democratic Party is the party for the average
let me ask you this, Tom.
For all Americans.
Tom, before we go, let me ask you this. So, if the Democrats are so far off with all of this, you Republicans in the midterms, clearly there's some people who still think that the Democratic Party and what they're doing is right because, you know, they're able to kind of hold serve. I'm one who agrees that the Democrats have not always been forthright with everything. Listen, we got to go to break, man. We'll talk about it a little bit more on the other side. 844-967-2789. It's Monday. That means Mondays with Sandy Williams. We'll be right back. Back to the Earl Ingram Show. As always, you can join us at 844-967-2789. That's 844-967-2789. You can text us at that same number. It's Monday. That means Mondays with Sandy Williams, and we're still having our dialogue. And the difference, I think, between the conversation that Sandy and I have been having on the air and off the air is at the end of all of it, it is that the direction that the nation is headed is not fair and right and just to many people in this nation. And who's going to fix that, I guess, is at the root of it. Who is going to answer and do and create the right legislation that will transform the lives of both the poor and the middle class? And so it's got to be more than, conversation. There's got to be some things that are going to, legislation that is going to happen in order for any of these things to change. And who's bringing up that legislation? I guess Sandy is.
Well, I guess in my book, I look backwards in time and the progressives and Bernie Sanders at the time of the nomination process were saying, you know what, we reflect the interests of not just the left in the Democratic Party, but we represent a lot of the populist thrust of rural America. And you know what? I think they were right. I think that the stuff they were talking about is the same stuff I'm talking about, which is the government delivering to them, for instance, Medicare for All and universal daycare, and messaging it to the people so they understood that this was right up the alley of the problems they were experiencing, and it was consistent with good government across the country and across the world, I mean. And I think the pitch now could be made to the capitalists of this country, the business people of this country, that we need to do this because the American version of capitalism is failing, because it's failing the middle class of America. And when the middle class of America can't make it because they don't have health care and they don't have child daycare, and those are common staples that are provided by the government almost every place else in the world, and we should realize it is the underpinnings, the architecture of a successful market economy is to have this underpinning of a social architecture that includes the daycare, healthcare, education, and retirement. It's the fundamental package that needs to surround a worker so that they can live comfortably enough to experience personal success in a workplace in which they're working for wages, okay? And America had this vacation time after World War II in which we didn't have competition and the middle class artificially experienced a very strong lifestyle because they had health care at work and because they didn't need daycare because there was a homemaker at home taking care of the children. That's history. That's in the rearview mirror. We have a new world, a new reality, and this new reality looks a great deal like the reality all across the world, and the rest of the world recognize these issues, and their version of the market economy and of capitalism is working better than ours, quite frankly.
So can that happen under the capitalism that we are dealing with today?
Sure. I think it has to do with leadership and messaging. I think, like Tom said, that if people who had a national platform could speak, you know, with real facts, a whiteboard, you know, maybe in a manner that's easier to listen to than Ross Perot used when he did his whiteboard presentations. But the people of America need to be talked to in a reality that they recognize and that they're experiencing. And if they are talked to that way, I think they will realign themselves politically to people who are going to speak to their problems, not to their emotions, but to their problems. And right now, I think the Republican Party has a grip on rural America because they're speaking to their emotions, because no one is speaking to their problems in an adequate fashion. If people were speaking to their problems, their emotions could subside. They could start thinking coherently and not just think about whether someone loves America, you know, and sort of the Lou from Cudahy nature of thinking, but they would think about whether this person is going to make America everything it could, can and should be for me, middle-class American.
But so, and I guess there are, in reality, people who are in positions who don't see it from the perspective of their constituents. Because I guess it's hard for me to imagine that say I'm a Republican and I'm a Ron Johnson and I just use his name and I don't fight for my constituents. I don't, my thing is I don't fight for that. I'm Ron Johnson and I don't bring to the table that my constituents need daycare. My constituents are hurting. He's a United States senator. Why is he not on the floor saying the things?
Because he hasn't had to, because the lesson he learned was that by stoking people's emotions and fears, he could get elected. And that's what the Republican Party so far has channeled. They've been channeling into America's emotions, the middle class emotions and fears and desperation, and fanning the flames of that. And saying we're going to represent you, we're going to be patriots. We're going to represent the motherland. All of this stuff distorts the view of these people and deflects it away from the thought that these politicians could actually be solving my problems.
So I've been reading, whether it's right or wrong, in different areas, Republican, Democrats. And there's this belief that the people who are voting for Democrats are more college educated, and you know, I don't know if you've heard that or read that anywhere.
Well, I'm sure it's
people in the rural areas, and so college educated people are voting more for Democrats, and rural area people are voting more Republican. Have you read that anywhere?
Well, sure, and it's probably true. It's probably based on polling. But again, this has to do with messaging as well. The rural America has all these problems, and it's a problem that is typical of what the Democratic Party would normally be addressing. They've just missed the boat for the last 20 years, that's all.
All right, listen, we've got to go to a break. 844-967-2789 is the number. You're tuned into the Earl Ingram Show. We'll be back.